All right, guys. Why are Americans so good at Rubik's Cube?
Why?
Because they have a history of separating colors.
Oh, geez.
Welcome to Racing Home Podcast. You're joined by your hosts, Fez and Nick. And today we have a special guest, Jason Canacri. Would you like to introduce yourself, Jason?
Hello, I'm Jason Canacri.
So Jason competes in track mod at GridLife as well in his McLaren 720S. We've mentioned him a little bit on our podcast before as well. He is literally goals for a lot of people because he not only tracks his 720S, but he also takes on rallies and dailies it every now and then and whatnot, right? Is that correct, Jason?
Yep. Yeah, that is correct. I put on supercar rallies all over the country. You know, go around, have fun with it. I don't know if I would say goals for a lot of people. I think it's like the Instagram thing, right? Sometimes it looks better than it actually is. But yeah, I guess from the outside perception, yeah, probably goals for a lot of people.
Well, it's definitely a goal of mine. Like, it definitely looks like it's a lot of fun. And I mean, who wouldn't want to have a Raptor and a McLaren 720S?
Yeah, I suppose. I can tell you how to do it. You want to know how? Do you want to cut to the chase? 30-second podcast?
Is it Bitcoin?
No. Oh, it could be. Dodge don't have kids. That's number one. And don't have a house. That's number two. Then you can just buy whatever you want.
Oh, man. I already fucked up on the second part. I already have two homes. One in Houston, one in Austin.
Yeah.
Well, the Houston one's a rental. So that's actually...
Oh, perfect.
Is that okay?
Perfect. Yeah, that's acceptable.
Okay, good.
You have to have things that make money.
Wait, so do you live out of the RV?
No.
Oh.
No, so my girlfriend, partner, Alex, so she has a house. When I've known her for years, I was married before, and when I got divorced, I had my apartment for a while, and then moved in here, and at the same time, we basically bought an RV, and then we bought a different RV, so she owns this. We split the bills and stuff like that. And then, then I have obviously the RV, the OpenStacker, the McLaren, the Raptor, BMW M3. And then she has a Mini Cooper and a Lincoln MKX, the SUV one.
Is that like the Ford Edge or the Ford?
Yeah. Same thing, but they charge you like 20 grand more because it has a different grill.
It is a lot of chrome.
It is a lot. I hate chrome. It's a lot of chrome. So,
oh, yeah.
But now we're thinking maybe she needs to have a Bronco Raptor or something.
How did they do over at... Oh, well, actually, we'll get into that later. I'm very curious to hear how the Bronco Raptor did at your recent snowball rally. Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later.
So, I also, for the house thing, I've actually heard... obviously both sides of the ways where people say it's like an appreciating asset, so you should always have a house. But then I've also heard like the other way around, like, yes, it's an appreciating asset potentially, but the amount of maintenance you have to do to keep upkeep and whatnot can also drive it, make it less of an appreciating asset.
Like, I mean, I'm kind of half joking about the house because you got to live somewhere, right? I think the bigger thing is the kids, but there's plus size of kids. So, I mean, I didn't have any kids, but my sister has three. So it's, you know, it's nice. I was close with them. They live in Houston. So we go down there often and, it's nice to spoil them. You get to be a part of their life and stuff like that. And then if you don't want to see them, you don't technically have to.
You just don't go to Houston. There's many.
Yeah, you don't go to Houston.
And then you get to be a cool uncle with all the cool cars.
Exactly.
I got a chance to take my nephew out on at Autobahn at the racetrack, and like I hope I'm his favorite uncle at this point, because if not, I don't know,
like, what else can you possibly do.
I took my one of the rallies that I did, we were at MSR Houston. I rented it for the day, and I took my mom, my uncle, my niece. I don't think my sister was there, but I took them all out, and every single one of them were like, "You're gonna kill me in this car." I'm like, "Haven't killed anybody yet. I think you're okay."
Basically, so like, whenever someone freaks out and they're riding passenger and they think that we're gonna go and crash, I'm like, "Relax. I don't want to crash this car any more than you do. I especially don't want to die any more than you do. So I'm pretty sure I'm driving within the limits. And so far, that has been true. I haven't crashed yet or died yet. But
yeah,
I completely get that. I've had it several times.
When somebody's in there, I usually dial it back to like maybe 0.6-ish. But yep. My whole goal is to make them car sick within one lap. That is my whole goal, especially in the McLaren. It's super easy. Like the sheer braking power that it has and what it can do, like almost everybody gets sick.
That is incredible. Oh. Have you ever been passenger inside your own McLaren? Not that I'm asking to drive it, but I'm just curious to see if being passenger is more nauseating than being driver.
On track, other than a parade lap, no. So Alex drove the 600 around like a mild spirited parade lap at Autobahn when I rented that for another rally. But other than that, no, I don't think so. I've been in a bunch of other like other people driving me in their cars, but
yeah,
none of them were really all that good. Usually what it'll do or what I'll do is like almost like an instructor role. So I'll bring them out and then I'll hop in with them, or I'll take them out in their car and then we'll switch. And they're trying to do the same things that I'm doing, but I've been doing this for 25 years.
Right.
So they're trying to shove 3 days of driving like this into like, you know, 25 years and try to accomplish the same thing. So
I have made myself
sick though, almost always by looking at my phone though, while sitting in the passenger seat on track.
Yep. That is like 100% the number one way to go and make myself sick as well. I've managed to get my wife sick on track to where she's telling me, hey, I'm getting sick, let's go off track. And then the other one that I can get sick pretty frequently without being on track is the dog. The dog will get The dog will get sick just doing a highway pull. And this will start panting.
Poor Ariel.
Whenever Ariel's in the car, I cannot drive aggressively at all.
We have a chocolate lab, and I don't know if you guys might have saw her at Midwest Fest or whatever. Alex is usually walking around. She's usually rocking like a Road America or something bandana. She's never been in any of my cars. Like, she goes in the Raptor all the time, but she's never been in the McLaren or the BMW. She was in, when I had my GT3 RS, she was in that sitting on the floor, but she was like a six-month-old puppy. I think we actually brought her home, like a eight-week-old puppy in the BMW. Or not the BMW, the GT3 RS.
Jeez, that's so, quite the chariot to come home to, or come home in.
She's like, I hit the jackpot. I don't even know what this thing is, but it's got houndstooth interior.
Does an immediate pull.
Yeah, instantly.
So, going from that, like, what made you choose the McLaren as your like track car over the GT3 RS? Like, why'd you sell the GT3 RS and get the McLaren?
Well, I think we got to start like before then. So I started doing track stuff with like SVT contours. So they're huge Ford guy. Like, my whole life I've been Ford. My stepdad, grandfather was vice president of Ford, in charge of manufacturing back in like the Henry Ford II era. And then his father was in charge of the Taurus program. So like, I grew up as a Ford person. Like, every car basically I've ever owned has been Ford up until, I don't know, 2019, something like that. So I had a bunch of Ford Taurus SHOs, Contour SVTs. I've been going to Gingerman since like 2004, maybe 2003. So before any of this stuff, I was tracking that, and then I bought a Mustang GT350R in like 2018, and then really started diving into that. I was getting sick of doing Raptor events only, and I needed some outlet to, like, I guess, I don't know, burn off my work frustrations, I guess. And so I was doing this long before, but then I started like really getting into it and dedicating, I would say, like 8 to 15 weekends a year doing this stuff. So started the Savage Rally, started out as GLRE Rally, in 2018 with a GT350R, and then I bought two more of those within the next 2 years.
You bought two more GT350Rs?
Yep.
Because you just didn't, like, you had three in a row, or just...
No. So I had one. Yeah, I had a magnetic gray, and then I was like, oh, I really want an Avalanche because that's the color Raptor I had. So then I sold that, and then bought an Avalanche one, and then sold that, and was like, I'm getting something drastically different. And I actually found it was a GT350, but the guy had converted it almost to like a full GT3 build. It had a massive wing on the back, a bunch of core motorsport splitter stuff up front. It was just a raw car. I owned it for 2 months, and the only reason I got rid of it is because it had painted stripes, and I absolutely hated them. Like, I didn't know it had painted stripes. I probably wouldn't have bought it because I hate the look of stripes on Mustangs. I think it looks cheesy.
I can agree with you there. I agree.
So I bought that, and then I was like, I want to get a Porsche, and I started looking at Porsches. So I bought the GT3 RS, and basically in my brain, I was like, this is amazing. There's no better car in the world. This is the like absolute fastest thing you could imagine. Took it to Gingerman. First lap out at Gingerman, I did a 137. And instantly I'm like, it's not that fast. Like in my brain, I'm like, that's not that fast. Like it's a $250,000 car.
That's about Club TR times now.
Yep. So then I was like, oh, what's the reason behind this? I'm like, okay, maybe it's me, or maybe it's just these really old Porsche tires. So then I put new Porsche tires on. It went 2 seconds faster. I got that car down to like a 135. And then I put on a rally. We rented Carolina Motorsports Park. And one of my buddies, I didn't know him at the time, but one of the guys on the rally, we became really good friends, has a green 600 LT. And so we're out on track at the same time, and we're looking at data, and he's 5 seconds faster than me. But like our corner speeds are the same. I'm like, let's just accelerate out of the last corner at the same time. And he just like no joke, he's just gone. I'm like, oh my Lord. Went home, basically put the car up for sale, and bought a 600 LT like 3 months later. And then I used that for, what was it? Not this year, last year, the first half of last year. And so I had the 600 LT for like a year and a half. And then a really good deal came up on the 720. So basically it was just a direct swap across for income tax or sales tax difference. So they gave me the same amount for my 600 that the 720 is, or that they wanted for that. And then I just had to pay $13,000 for sales tax. So direct swap across. And
there you go.
And the 720 is insane. Like the 600 is an amazing, amazing car. But the things that the 720 does is like absolutely ridiculous. Like I was doing 135s, scrubbing a brand new set of Supercar 3Rs at Midwest Fest in like the final qualifying three. I just like put them on and I was like, all right, I just got to get all the stuff off of these. And I was doing 135s like effortlessly.
In terms of a raw car for tracking, which one do you prefer, 600 LT or 720? Because the 600 LT is more for... Gotcha.
Yeah, the 600 LT, anything with an LT is like McLaren's version of, you know, whatever Ford Performance nomenclature you want to use, or RS or anything like that. But my 720 isn't really a normal 720 either. So it's basically a 765 from a full aero perspective now. I have a full car. Everything from the doors forward now is carbon fiber 765 parts. So the front bumper, all that stuff is all carbon. And the rear is on order to do the quad exhaust, the long tail rear, all that stuff as well. So the only part on the car probably by Midwest Fest that rolls around that isn't carbon is the doors. So it'll be full exterior carbon except for the door skin, which they're like, well, we can build you doors. And then they tell me the price. I'm like, no, it can stay black. It's okay.
And that's like just for people too. Like I've seen the car in person and man, the car looks so good. It looks so menacing. Usually like people go with like different colors on these 720s, but the black looks phenomenal with the carbon.
Yeah, really good. And it looks, I agree with Fez where he says it looks menacing. I first saw when I was over at HMP this past year, and seeing you come around the corner, I was with my wife when she was taking photos. It is incredibly loud coming around. Why does it whistle?
Yeah, so that's a thing that only the stock exhaust does. So it didn't whistle until I had a full titanium aftermarket exhaust on it. And then the V-band clamp broke because it was like put together kind of dumb from the company that made it. And when I put the stock one back on, like all of a sudden it developed this whistle. But every stock sport exhaust 720 has that same whistle. So you can tell if it's a stock 720 exhaust basically by that. None of the aftermarket ones do it.
Okay.
I was on track with Andy Hollis actually here at ECR last year, and he just shotgunned past me in the straightaway, and it just sounded like a jet. I'm assuming it's the same whistle that you have, probably.
Yours. Yeah, yeah, it's the same. It almost, you ever hear like the old Evo MRs where it's like just sounds like air moving with a slight whistle? It's almost that same noise.
Yeah, it's insane.
And it's like, we were last weekend, we were BSing about a bunch of other cars. Some of the guys that were with me have GTRs, and they're all talking about these 2000 horsepower GTRs that do 60 to 130 in 1.9 seconds. And I was like, oh, that's cool. My completely stock car does it in like 4 seconds. And then when it was tuned, it did it in like 3.3 seconds. And it's a track car, not a drag car, like that only does these things in a straight line.
But right,
like just
like one horse ponies.
Yeah, like the 720 is just an insane, absolutely insane piece of machinery. It's hands, I toy with selling it, and I'm like, what am I gonna buy? Like, it's hands down the best car on track I've ever driven.
That's pretty cool.
So what are your plans with it for 2024? Are you still going to be in track mod with it, or are you going to a different class? I know you were building a car for GLTC too, right?
Yeah, so if the BMW ever starts ever again or runs, it'll be a GLTC car. So after the little incident in front of you, Fez, it still hasn't even ran since then. It has a new motor. Everything is repaired. Everything. But when you start it, it just sounds like there's something wrong. Like it won't stay running, like the timing's slightly off. But my mechanic is also my buddy's mechanic, and he just finished building a 5-linked Coyote with a Whipple on it for his Raptor. So his Gen 2 Raptor, he got rid of the EcoBoost and put a Coyote with a Whipple on it. And then the Gen 3 Raptor rear suspension. So for the big event that I had last weekend, I was like, okay, the BMW can sit for now. It's no big deal. But, I mean, really the plan is to do track mod again, I guess, unless I want to go down. I do have a set of street mod tires I could use, and technically it is street mod legal with 285s on it. But I don't know if I really want to play that game. Like, I kind of feel like a dick going down into that class. I only use the 720 in street mod for two events. I did Lime Rock and Heartland Motorsports Park in 22. and Andy was there as well, mm-hmm. and he beat me by 1/10 of a second. He was on Supercar 3Rs, and I was on RE71 RSs. I had a 285 rear. Other than that, the cars were like identical.
Andy Vocal?
No, Andy Hollis. He lives down in the Austin gotcha. Area.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that car was legal for street mod, but interesting.
Yeah, as long as you put 285s on it in the rear instead of the 305.
Wasn't there some rule about the exhaust having to go underneath the driver or something like that?
Yeah, I think for those that has to exit behind the driver door, but the 720 is out the back and the 600s up out like shoots up upright. So that one doesn't. A lot of them, every time either car was ever protested was because it's a flat floor. So per McLaren, it says it in the wording, it says flat floor, but it actually has guide vanes on the bottom. So technically, I guess it's not really flat. But then there's a rule that says unless OEM equipped, but I don't know. It's a really hard car to deal with on a 200 treadwear 285 rear tire. It like at Heartland Motorsports Park, I could barely finish one lap and the tires would be gone. It just annihilates rear tires when they're 285s. How much
power are you making?
So in the stock form, it makes 690 at the wheel. And then when I was running the tune that I had, it was like 830.
So. Are you still going to that tune? Because I know that incident that you mentioned with your McLaren that blew up and then the E92 that had the motor issue as well. Are you going back to that risky tune or are you just sticking with stock tune for now?
No. So right now I just have they call it stage zero. So you still get all the perks and benefits, I guess, if there is any other than costing me a bunch of money of having the tuning and be able to data log. Cause you can't data log the, with the stock tune on it. They call it their stage zero, which is just a stock tune with data logging capability. But I think when I pull apart the rear, I'm probably going to send it back to them and be like, just flash and put the stock tune back on. I don't want to even have to deal with this. So that's kind of the plan.
Nice.
I was just looking through the rules for street mod, and I'm surprised that there was no price cap for street mod. I had assumed that there'd be
because... a cap
similar to street where it's like 83 or something like that. But going on about street mod.
Nope, there's no price cap, and I think mainly because the amount of money that these guys are already investing into it would basically make that null and void, right? So, Dewey's got a ton of money into that car. So the car itself didn't cost him all that much, but now there's a ton of money into it. And then, Jackie was in there with the Supra. So, if a normal person tried to replicate that, it'd probably be another $100,000 on top of the cost of the Supra. So,
at that point, you just go to the nearby McLaren dealership and buy a 720F.
Exactly. You could do that and still be able to street drive it with your full interior, your AC kicking, listen to dubstep at the start finish line or in grid or whatever you want to do.
What's your song of choice when you're waiting to head out on track?
Oh, I don't know. I just usually play something. Halfway through last year, the song of choice became pretty much anything on the Taylor Swift Midnights album. So we went in for Christmas last year. I ended up buying Alex tickets to go see Taylor Swift in Detroit. And I was the whole time, I'm like, oh, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. Mm-hmm. And then I went there. I'm like, oh my God, this is the greatest performance of all time.
It's a lot of fun.
It's so bizarre to say.
People are comparing Taylor Swift lately to Michael Jackson. They're calling her the new queen of pop because of how she's selling out all these concerts, changing the economy of that city or that state, causing earthquakes with her concerts. It's insane what she's doing. Would you agree with that after going to her concert?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I never saw Michael Jackson. I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I know who he is. but, yeah, I mean, I was talking, I mean, I have a like a bunch of buddies who, and you know, a lot of them are like Morgan Wallen fans or stuff like that. And some of them went, I think in Detroit, he was here 2 weeks before Taylor Swift or something. And I was like, did Morgan Wallen sing for 3 hours, have 20 costume changes, and do all this other stuff and bring in whatever hundreds of millions of dollars in there? They're like, no, he sang for an hour and 15 minutes. I'm like, lame. Next. but it was just, it was really cool. It's a spectacle. It's like a legit spectacle to watch her. And whether, you know, you like her old music or new music, or you don't like it at all, the spectacle is a spectacle. It is a legit thing. Like, I was shocked.
That is pretty cool. So, I've been seeing a lot of like the Instagram posts going around. It seems like a lot of fun. Even people who are sitting up in the nosebleed seats or off to the side of the stage are still saying that it's a worthy experience. And hey,
if
it gets you first place in track mod for the season, then you get something to listen to.
Yeah, for sure. Unless it's karma, and then maybe that's the reason why. You got to blow up those motors to get first place.
How many engines did you go through in 2023?
Oh, I don't want to talk about
topic.
Three.
End the podcast. We're done.
Yeah, so three. The 720 at Road America. The M3 in front of Fez at Mid Ohio. And so Robbie from 1010s technically, I guess, killed the Mini Cooper. But
I heard that podcast, and I heard about the debacle with that Mini engine.
Yeah, it started misfiring, but we're like in the middle of Georgia. Like, what are you going to do? Just randomly leave it. So we just kept driving, and then we got on the Cherokee Skyway. Alex jumped in with me in the McLaren. Alex and Robbie's wife Jess were in the McLaren. I was driving the Mini Cooper, and then we switched. So Robbie drove the Mini Cooper, and going up the Cherokee Skyway, it started to really act up. But then he took it down Tail the Dragon and back, and he was doing perfectly fine with it. But anything more than like a half throttle would start to miss. And basically it melted a piston. And then the only way you could keep it running was to hold it to the floor. And then it ejected the dipstick out of the tube. And then a geyser of oil followed it. And it was just it sucks.
That was quite, that sounds quite the mess.
I think Eric Streeter, when he was driving his Mini Cooper to Heartland 2 years ago, in 2022, similar thing. Like, he blew his motor driving to the track or on track. I can't remember, but yeah.
I didn't know that they were like this. Yeah, I didn't know that they were this temperamental. Like, I mean,
just BMW things, you know.
I always heard the Mini Cooper engines were quite concerning. My wife at least wants a Mini Cooper, but a friend of ours, his father-in-law, has purchased quite a few minis off auction, and every single one of them is on auction. It looks perfect, but then you try to turn the key, and the engine either does turn over and it makes some terrible marble sounds inside, or just doesn't turn over at all.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a headache. I mean, I blame Italian Job for this car being here. She says that's why she wanted it. She really liked the Italian Job movie. And she went to Michigan State, so it was green with a white roof. It was like a perfect setup for her. And I don't even know. Like, it got fixed because it broke a timing chain guide, and then it like jumped timing but still somehow kept running. And then that cost like $3,000, and then like 800 miles later, now it melted a piston. This is probably $5,000. I'm guessing the car was only six. So
sounds like it's time for a K swap.
Yeah, or do a Model S plaid motor into the front of it.
Just to the front wheels.
Yeah.
That sounds like a death trap.
Go faster in reverse than forward. have you ridden in a plaid?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you understand like the acceleration experience.
Oh yeah.
It is wild to be in an all-wheel drive car and the front wheels are struggling to get grip. And yet you're still doing 0-60 in what? 2.5, depending on the state of charge of the battery. It's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, they're pretty wild cars, that's for sure.
Is this a legit thing you're gonna try to do, or is this like napkin?
No, we were BSing about it last weekend, like on ways to make it reliable. So K-swap was like the instant thing. Like everyone was like, K-swap it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what'll happen. I don't know. The unreliability is exhausting. So
knock on wood, my RS has been pretty damn reliable. You guys are making me scared though with all these motor blowing.
You didn't have no head gasket issues?
No, the head gasket was swapped out before I even bought it. I bought it brand new back in 2018, and it was a 2017 model. It had 80 miles on the odometer, and the head gasket was replaced prior to me buying it. So sometime between mile 0 and mile 80, it had the head gasket done.
Oh, wow.
80,000 miles later, has not given me any problems. So I'm actually going to be...
I see them every once in a while. There's a bunch of them for sale in Detroit all the time. And I'm like, oh, should I get one of these as a day? I need a daily. Like, I'm putting too many miles on my truck. So.
Oh, man. I thought. Like,
should I get an RS?
If you're a Ford person already, then, like, it's pretty satisfying. I love the car. I've always loved all-wheel drive cars, especially when they're four-cylinder and manual. And so the RS was just that perfect blend of performance, practicality. It was my only car when I was finishing up college, so it was a perfect blend in that I could like drive it as a practical car as a daily, and then once I got money and established myself, then I could really start tracking it, and if stuff broke on it, it didn't matter.
Yeah, I just need something to commute back and forth. I was like, you know what I need is an RS6. I end up with these like stupid ideas that if I got an RS6, then I could sell the McLaren and then use the RS6 for a rally, and then buy like a KTM Expo GT2 car or something, or some silly Ferrari Challenge car, and then run in a limited with that.
What are you going to do this year, by the way?
A bunch of dumb ideas. Well, if the BMW is done, Coda, and then
for Super Lap Metal in March
for the GLTC. So I'll bring the M3 to do GLTC if it's done. I'm hoping it's done. I have everything waiting basically for it to be done. So the tuners are all on standby. It just has to run. It has to be a driving car before they can do anything. So, but then what did I sign up for? Rev Up, Midwest Fest, Road America, Autobahn, and Pit Race. All time attack. And then my plan is after you two buy my trailer, I'm going to buy an enclosed stacker. And then I'm going to bring the 720 and the M3. And then I'm going to buy GLTC tickets for all five of those events too, and do time attack and GLTC.
Wow. Must be nice to have a stacker to be able to bring
you guys event. Have it.
I don't think Fez Tundra can tow that stacker.
Yeah, I don't know about that. What stacker?
Mine.
Oh, gotcha. But yeah, how much does that weigh?
3,800 with nothing on it.
Is it that light? 3,800 pounds?
Yeah. Yep.
So
I thought it was over 5,000, to be honest.
No. It has 3,800.
And Fez, how much can your Tundra tow?
I think 11 or 12.
Hey, probably really close.
We're going to be putting it. Yeah, because the RS is a porker. RS weighs 3,450 right now.
I did rough math of 3,000 pounds for my car, 4,000 pounds for your car, and then 3,800 for the stacker. Around 11,000, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, yeah. So we'll be back to doing Tacoma speeds on the highway.
I don't mess towing with Tacoma.
It got the job done.
It's a slippery slope. Then all of a sudden you got to buy a Super C because you need somewhere to stay, and you can't tow it because a normal Class A is like can't tow anything.
Damn it. Right.
Or you end up sleeping in your truck. I don't know.
We're already talking about it. We're already talking about getting like a big RV with like an enclosed trailer eventually. Long term goals.
Yep. You gotta have goals.
So Jason, you talked about how your family was also into in automotive and at Ford. And you live in Detroit, right? So are you in automotive as well?
Yes. So I run one of the largest, I don't know if you guys know what electromagnetic compatibility is. So I run one of the largest radio frequency automotive test labs in the country. So we do testing on pretty much every electronic component that'll end up in a vehicle for every company. So we've done stuff, Lamborghini Urus taillights, Cybertruck, that center bar rear thing, Cybertruck center stack or whatever display module they're using, headlights. We do a ton of headlights. And basically we're just making sure that they play nicely together with all the other electronics from an RF interference standpoint. So when you put your phone inside, you can still use your instrument cluster, your radio and everything else. So I have 16 people, 17 people that work for me.
Wow.
But yeah.
Is this all required testing that the OEMs like require themselves to go through, or is it a, it is. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a subset, like, so for Ford Motor Company, there's 1, 2, 3, we'll say like 13 specific EMC tests they have to conform to. And then there's a whole another set of environmental or regulatory or reliability tests, like vibration, thermal shock, stuff like that, temperature cycling, that they have to also adhere to. So my lab, like I said, we do just electronic RF testing side. And we have another lab outside of Boston, Massachusetts, that we outsource all of our environmental or reliability testing to.
Wow, that is very cool. So are most of the employees on your team, are they electrical engineers? Or what educational background are they?
Yeah, so it's, you can't use, or you can't really learn this anywhere. There's like some little tiny school in Rolla, Missouri that teaches EMC. And there, you'll have like some random electrical engineering electives some places. So I have 7 engineers that work for me and like 10 technicians. But almost all of them end up learning like on the job. Right. So basically you're going to school, you can prove that, you know, yep, I understand, you know, electrical radio frequency theory, et cetera. But the real what's happening is almost always learned there, especially from a testing standpoint and like the physics behind it and everything along those lines. So I did electronic warfare or radar jamming and threat detection in the Air Force on the B-2 stealth bomber. So in like the early 2000s. So that airplane that flew over the Rose Bowl that everybody was freaking out about, that's one of the airplanes that I worked on.
That's super cool. So what, how'd you get the idea of starting like a test lab?
So when I got out of the Air Force, I had this amazing idea that I was going to move back to the Upper Peninsula. That's where I grew up, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And then I quickly realized that there's no jobs up there. And if I wanted to do anything with my life, I needed to leave. So I moved to Green Bay for like 8 months, worked at Best Buy as a car audio installer, actually turned down a job with a Gulfstream working on aircraft because it didn't pay enough, which ended up being more than I was making at Best Buy, but whatever.
I was about to say, that sounds like, how would be making less than Best Buy income?
Yeah, it was really weird. So then I did that for a year and then I left and moved to Detroit, and a headhunter found me at like a military thing and was like, hey, this company is looking for somebody who can do EMC. They're explaining it. And I was like, I don't, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, it's, it sounds like what I did in the Air Force, but your acronym's wrong. And like, I don't know. And so that company was Denso. They're like one of the, I mean, they're basically Toyota's former electronics division. Yeah, that's where I got my start in EMC. So worked there for 5 years, then left there, went to Continental Automotive Systems, who at one point was the largest electronics purchaser in the world. Was an engineer for them for 5 years, and then left and built a lab for Nippon Seiki, which is a Japanese instrument cluster supplier. And then the company that I work for now, Bureau Veritas, we have 88,000 employees worldwide, 120 test labs all over the world, sent me a message and said, hey, we're going to build this lab in Detroit. Are you interested in doing this? And at first I said no. And then the more we talked about it and adjusted the scope, the more it made sense. So I ended up building this lab here. So 20,000 square foot. $25 million roughly invested into it. And then it does right around $500,000 of revenue a month.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, it affords the McLaren and affords the...
No, that doesn't. That doesn't pay for the McLaren at all. The rallies pay for the McLaren. So like my side...
So how did you start the
rally? Side business hustle is what pays for the McLaren and the Raptor, technically. When I built the lab at Nippon Seiki, that company only builds like five instrument clusters a year. So we didn't really have a lot to do. And so I get bored really quickly. So I decided I was going to expand the Raptor stuff and do supercar stuff. So the Raptor event stuff I've been doing since 2012, I think. So like 12 years now. And super.
Like when the first Raptor came out?
Yeah.
The first gen? Oh,
so I decided I was going to, I used to, when I was a kid, I mean, I guess not a kid, but in my young 20s, there was this movie that came out by Mischief TV called, it was like Gumball 3000, basically. So it was like their thing, Mischief 3000, it was called. It was like their documentary of them trying to join this ultra exclusive, like supercar rally called the Gumball. And so I was like, I want to do the same thing, but with Ford Raptors instead. And instead of doing this on roads, we're going to do it in the snow in the Upper Peninsula. And so that's what I did. So a 3-day event, point-to-point rally it was at the beginning. And I put out the information, and in 20 minutes, there was 50 people signed up. That is super cheap. It was like $125. For the first one. Now, 12 years later, it's $1,400 for the weekend, includes hotels and everything. And it sells out in 15 minutes with 130 trucks.
That's awesome.
That's incredible. I didn't realize that your events included hotels. That price included...
Even the rallies, it's all...
I thought that was just
right to get it. Yeah, even the rallies, it's all inclusive, everything. So... Not your food, because like some, it gets to be too much of a process. Like some people have dietary restrictions and stuff like that. And it's like, we're doing so many other things. Like sometimes, unfortunately, the easiest thing is McDonald's. So to like, in my brain, I'm like, if I charge you $2,000 and we're eating at McDonald's, I'm doing something wrong. Right. So I don't do it because I would rather, if I'm charging you money, you're going to be eating like something good, not a McDouble.
But yeah, I have more questions for you about that, Jason, because I've been also trying to work with Lambeau Club of Dallas here to host like an event for them. But I will talk to you offline about stuff like that.
Okay.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going into the rally, like you had recently had a rally with your Raptor crew in the Upper Peninsula, correct? How did that go for you?
Yeah, so Upper Peninsula, Michigan, it's called the Snowball, no W, S-N-O-B-A-L-L. It was great. So 2 weeks ago, everybody was sending me messages. There's no snow up there. Are we still doing this? What's going to happen? Like, like, this is a big problem. There's no snow. It's a fully permitted, insured event by the Department of Natural Resources in Michigan. And it's the longest permitted event that they have ever issued a permit for. So we do like almost 700 miles. And like I said, there was no snow on Thursday. The Upper Peninsula got like 1 inch of snow. And between Friday at noon and Saturday at 7 p.m., they got 38 inches of snow.
Yeah, wasn't it super snowed. Cold too?
Oh, yeah. It was like single digits, and it snowed 3 feet in 24 hours. Like all lake effect snow, basically. And so there's two trails that we go to. One's called Pashiki Grade Road, and the other one's called Grapevine. And there's some videos that are on my Instagram of me like breaking through these trails, and I can't even see out of the windshield of the truck. The snow is so high coming over the hood. And I had people sitting in the bed of the truck so that it would keep the back down to give me a little more front lift so that less snow was going over the hood.
That's crazy.
Like it was the wild. It was like Utah powder in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which almost never happens. It was so light and fluffy. We shot a video. I jumped off of the back of my truck, did a backflip into or front flip into like a 5 foot snowdrift, and I knocked the wind out of myself because nothing slowed me down. Like I hit the solid ground at the same speed I went into the snow.
Were you okay? Like, is that video on Instagram for us to view?
Not yet. It's coming. and then my buddy, who does a bunch of race stuff up in Minnesota, he knows a lot of the Minnesota guys. He's on the back of the truck. He goes, "I'm coming to help." And he like jumps in and like belly flops on top of me. I'm like, "Oh God, just get off me, please. I'm too old for this." but it's a ton of fun. It's a big mix of going fast on these. There's a lot of very curvy technical roads that are dirt roads, logging roads. We don't go anywhere where snowmobile trails are. We let them have their snowmobile trails. We don't interfere with that. I also have no interest in having a snowmobile to Ford Raptor collision. But yeah, it's when there's that much snow, it's like just a process on keeping moving forward and trying to get your team all gathered together. Like some need to be shoveling, some need to be winching. And we just got to keep moving forward to accomplish this task at hand. And it's a really cool team building exercise. And then we go back, we stay at, it's maybe like a 3-star casino hotel. But it's the nicest hotel in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We go back there and there's bars and we BS and everybody has fun, eats dinner, and this goes on for like 4 days. And then we have a big banquet with a charity raffle that goes. We've been donating to Paws with a Cause currently. We used to do Wounded Warrior Project or Intrepid Falling Hero Fund or Breast Cancer Research Foundation. There's a whole bunch we've donated throughout the years. And, yes, we just have it's almost like a big wedding type event with 250 people in it. It's a huge, huge event, and gotten so wild.
How many rigs show up for that event?
So 128 registered, and I think 5 didn't show up. So 123 in total.
You guys had 123 rigs all in a row going through these trails.
No. So it gets split into 6 groups.
Gotcha.
So 100. And so you end up with like 100 and, or like 20 trucks per group. But it seems like there's 100 and some from the outsider standpoint, because anytime there's more than like 5, it seems like they just keep coming and coming. But the whole parking lot of the casino, they have 415 rooms at this casino, and more than half of the parking lot is Ford Raptors. That's the only thing that's allowed to go. So whether you have an F-150 Raptor or Bronco Raptor, that's the only thing. Other people have sent me messages, can I bring my F-150 with Raptor stuff on it? Nope. I said I'll allow them when the event takes longer than 3 hours to sell out. And it sells out, the longest it's been in the last 10 years to sell out is 30 minutes.
Wow.
So
that's awesome. And you've been doing this for since 2012, you said?
This, the 2013, January 2013. This was the 12th one.
You just do one a year?
Yep. One. And then we do one Raptor, big Raptor event. And then we do one, like, invite only out west, like, blast through the desert, like, full, like, more traditional type of desert type off-roading. Around Vegas to wherever we're going to go, whether it's Ocotillo Wells or Saltland Sea or Jackson, Wyoming or wherever. I put together a whole route at the end of June, and we do 7 days, usually like 10 to 15 trucks out there, and then all the hotels and everything are included. We do like a down day at the pool in Vegas with rented cabanas and a whole bunch of other stuff. So...
Nice. And then you also do the Savage Rally, right?
Yep. Yeah. So Savage Rally, I do three of those a year. I started that in 2018, and one of my really good friends at the same time started a Savage Garage YouTube channel. And I was like, do you want me to run this as if it's essentially just offshoot of your company to help your YouTube channel, because I don't really care all that much about like publicity or anything from that aspect. Like, I mean, I don't know what's the easiest way to say it. I don't really care if 13-year-olds approve or disapprove of what I'm doing on YouTube. And I think that's like the target market for most of these car channels, mm-hmm. is 13-year-old kids, which is good. Then, you know, when I was 13, I would be probably 10 feet up their ass about, McLaren P1s and stuff like that. But I don't really care about doing YouTube type stuff. So I was putting on the rally. We were doing 75 car supercar rallies. We went from Austin to Galveston to New Orleans to what's the place in Alabama? Gulf Shores, Alabama to Orlando. In 5 days, with 75 supercars. And it's just a spectacle. Everywhere you go, it's a spectacle, and it's exhausting because you can't get dinner anywhere because you have 150 people and you're just like showing up like, hi, we're here to eat dinner. Like, oh, we can only fit 30 of you.
So does everyone just split up, I'm assuming?
Yeah, everyone just, all right, you guys are on your own. That's another reason why I don't include food. But yeah, so do that. We're on our 13th event. We'll be in April. I'm doing a supercar event from Pittsburgh to the Catskills in New York to Central Park, Manhattan, and then to Philadelphia. So shoot, the Manhattan aspect should be very interesting because I think it's going to be a traffic jam and we're going to be stuck in Central Park in these cars. And it should be pretty cool to talk about.
Yeah. If you need a photographer, let me know. I got you.
Yeah. There's a lot. We have a lot of guys that come out and shoot photos for us and everything else. The problem's always like what's acceptable because the rooms are so insanely expensive. Like the one night at Central Park is $1,400, I think, for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So. Very, very expensive.
I know, Nick, you had some questions about the Bronco as well earlier.
Yeah, how did the Bronco do, the Bronco Raptor?
Yeah, so Ford Performance so Ford Motor Company brings cars to the Snowball, and they use it as like a test bed. So they brought, I think, four Bronco Raptors, four Raptor Rs, and then two Gen 3 EcoBoost Raptors. And the Bronco Raptor did good. There was an issue with one of them where maybe there wasn't enough coolant in it or something, and then it got like an air pocket by the thermostat and wasn't cycling coolant through it, so it thought it was overheating, but it wasn't really overheating. And then we basically opened the reservoir, added some coolant, and it's worked perfectly fine the rest of the weekend. If I'm being honest, I think it may be the most impractical, amazing vehicle that you could buy, because it's like a side-by-side that you can drive on the street anywhere you want, but it has no storage capability. Like, I'd own one if it could hold skis, but it can't hold skis. Even the four-door, you have to get a roof rack, and now you're getting like 13 miles to the gallon. So if I'm going to get 13 miles to the gallon, I might as well just have the F-150 Raptor.
Even with the seats down?
But oh yeah, it doesn't hold skis. At least it doesn't hold my skis. So,
wow.
Like my giant slalom race skis don't fit in a four-door Raptor or Bronco.
See, my wife and I are pretty short, and I think she and I would be able to like fit comfortably inside. I'm only 5'5", and she is maybe 5 foot.
The headroom inside is amazing.
So you could comfortably like put it's a helmet on?
The cargo room. Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. But the cargo room for like if you have something in the back seat or whatever, and that's where it kind of lacks the size.
I'll have to go check it out.
Just the amount of cargo you can bring with it.
Yeah, because that's something that I really like about the Expedition right now is the fact that we just got back from Big Ben. And we camped inside, and wherever we take it, we camp on the inside with a full-size air mattress blown up, and then we just, all our college full-size mattress material, we still have it with us, bed lining, comforter, and everything. We pack it inside in the back. So, like, for us right now, the Expedition is phenomenal. It's just, I look over the Bronco, and, like, it's so much more capable out of the box. And that is something that is attractive, but it doesn't tow as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have a buddy that owns, what does he got? A Bronco Raptor, a Gen 3 3.5 Raptor, and now a Raptor R. And he has a video of him pulling his Gen 3 Raptor with his Bronco Raptor on a steel trailer down the expressway. So, I mean, it could do that until it can't anymore. I guess.
Until it gets the air pocket in the coolant.
Don't take any trailering advice for myself.
I mean, technically the 8.6 can tow too, but for how long, that's the question.
Exactly.
When I got out of college, I had a tow hitch on the back of the Focus. I towed a 6x12 U-Haul trailer from San Angelo to Austin through the Texas Hill Country. Was a clutch happy at the end of that trip? It was not. That's probably why it's dead now at 83K, but it was something that I did. When you're a college kid and you can only afford a $20 trailer and not the whole van.
Yeah, I listened to your guys' podcast about when you were off-roading and Fez thought his truck was so big. You should see when like a Raptor's around like a normal thing. It's so massively wide. Like it's so. How wide is your truck, Fez?
I think I gotta look it up.
We did look it up 83? Last time. 80.2 inches, because Kenny was saying that the Tundra and his what was the other vehicle? The normal size Bronco was like the same width.
82, yeah.
So 80.2 inches.
Yeah, the Bronco Raptor is 85, I think, or 86.
And that's at the fender?
And the stock Raptor.
That's like fender width or mirror width?
That's fender width.
Good.
Really tire width. And then the F-150 Raptor, I think, is 88. And almost all of us, well, not my current one, but my old one was 93 outside tire. So when I had my old long travel, there's pictures floating around somewhere in a Grid Life thing. I towed my 720 with my open aluminum trailer behind my long travel Raptor to Lime Rock.
Oh, I think I remember seeing that photo.
For the first Circuit Legends thing. there's a lot of people that were taking photos of that. I think the truck got more attention than anything else. The truck was so wild.
But... That's awesome. Yeah, my issue isn't like how wide the truck was, right? The issue is that we always take trails here that are so narrow.
Oh yeah, like little my truck like little side by side ones.
Yeah, there was once we were in Arkansas, and Nick was actually our guide there, and he decided to take us on these trails that were meant for side by sides or dirt bikes. And we were in we weren't in our big trucks. We had like a Tacoma, a GX, and like a 4Runner or something like that. And yeah, we did not fit, and it was just a pain the entire time. Like we were just had a lot of anxiety.
Tons of pinstriping.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, my truck was very heavy with pinstripes when I gave it back. I hit a tree actually that trip because I had nowhere else to go, and the throttle was really touchy, so I like touched. Just went into straight into a tree.
I hit a tree one time, my buddies, because I'm always the first truck up at Snowball, and like breaking trail is like a huge thing because there's just the amount of snow that's flying over the truck and everything else. And my buddy's wife was like, "Hey, can I hop up there with you for a minute and break trail just to see what it's like?" I'm like, "Yeah, jump in." So he jumps in. And I'm thinking it's like a crazy amount of snow. It looks like it's a lot of snow. So I just get this big running start. It's on this old elevated train like embankment where there are some train tracks. They removed them. There was only like a foot and a half of snow, but it went over to the hood of the truck and I lost where I was at. And we hit a tree at like 15 miles an hour. And then the tree had so much snow on it, it covered the truck, and then we had to get dug out of the truck by other people outside because it like dumped all of its snow onto it.
Jeez. So,
yeah. But
yeah, no, I want to do an off-road or overlanding trip in a what's it called? In snow. That's also on the list to do, but I think I'll probably be getting rid of my truck this year.
Definitely cold, I can tell you that. It was the day it was snowing, it was 12 degrees last weekend, and then it was negative 13 and negative 8 up there.
Yeah. So, well, the good thing is that you expect it, though, right? You expect it to be cold so you come prepared.
It's not a shock. It's not like all of a sudden, like a cold front moves in August and it's 30 degrees out.
Yeah, that's kind of what happens in Texas. We don't really get, it doesn't get cold for very long here, but when it does, it literally changes within like an hour. It was 60 degrees last weekend. We were out go-karting, and on the drive back home, by the time we got back home, it was 27.
I remember I was stationed in Wichita Falls for a year. That was where my second tech school was when I was in the Air Force, and I remember it was like sunny and yeah, like 65. And then we were playing football and then it started snowing on the same day. And I'm like, what the world is going on here? Like, how is it this drastically different?
Yeah, just Texas things.
Yep.
But anyways, Jason, those are all the questions I had. Nick, do you want to add anything else? I know we're a little over.
Yeah, it's all good. No, I'm good. Thank you, Jason, so much for coming on. This is awesome hearing about like your beginnings and how you got into your business and all the rally car and Raptor stuff. I'd always was curious myself.
Yeah, of course. And thanks for having me. Hopefully you guys are getting ready for, I don't know, Rev Up or CMP. What ones are you guys doing? I know you already covered it, but what's your first Grid Life event?
We'll be at Rev Up.
Rev Up. We'll be
Rev
there.
Up, then Midwest, Mid-Ohio, and Road America. And I'll potentially be at Lime Rock as well.
Yeah, Lime Rock's a ton of fun. It's just in the middle of nowhere. Like, even my buddy who lives an hour and a half from there and has been there a lot, he's like, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Are there any hotels nearby, or did you guys camp?
Yeah, it's like, we stayed at this place. I could send you, it's like this old, like it's like an old hotel or something that we stayed at. It was 12 miles away, but it was like the nicest place. Like, there's no food there except for the racetrack. There's no nothing. Everything is like 12, 15 miles away. So it's kind of a process. Like if you have an RV or something to stay in, that's the way to do it. Otherwise, you have to stay at a hotel and you're going to miss things because you're just not there.
Yeah. Are you bringing your RV? Do you have room for one more?
No, I'm not going to Lime Rock, at least as of right now. Yeah. It doesn't it's not a place that really suits the McLaren. So the big issue with it is it has really small tires in the front. So it understeers like really bad. And if there's not a place to exploit the just sheer acceleration that it has, like there's nothing you can really do about it. Like it's fast. Don't get me wrong. I think I was running like 56s. But it's not like super fast. Like you take that thing to Road America and it runs like 214s.
Wow.
So, or Gingerman,
like 20 seconds or 30 seconds faster than I think most Club TR cars.
In Gingerman, it does it'll do a 130 all day long in crappy conditions. So even with drift marbles everywhere, it's doing 130s.
So it could be a Midwest this year.
It just have to. Yeah. Yep. I'll be there. Hopefully running GLPC and that. I think, was it last year or whatever, I sat down with you, Fez, for a while at Midwest, just BSing?
Yeah.
You guys were eating hot dogs or something?
Something. I don't remember.
I try to get around and BS with everybody and just mingle. There's so many people there. And plus, if I'm not in front of the car, then I don't have to talk to people that I don't know.
Yeah. I remember our first conversation was it was like cold as heck at Midwest or Rev Up. I can't remember, but we were at the gas station. That's where I met you. And you were like, if it gets too cold, knock twice for beer and knock once if you want to come inside. I was like, all right. Yeah.
It was cold that day, right? At night. I think it was cold.
It got super cold, yeah.
I remember going there and I had to wait for the stupid defrost to defrost the car.
This was Rev Up, I think, because Midwest wasn't that cold. Yeah.
Yep.
But that was record time or record weather.
Yeah. Michigan's weird too. That lake really changes things. So
I'm hoping for that type of weather again this time for Rev Up because I want to get down to 38s with my car.
Yeah, I think you can do it. It's definitely there.
Yeah.
So
very good. Any questions for us, Jason, before you go?
No, I mean, the big question I had was, why are you guys commuting from Texas to the Midwest? But it makes sense, right? I mean, I could be doing this, for lack of a better term, anywhere, but I do think that Grid Life is doing an amazing job. The big thing I don't like about a lot of the other places is when the track goes cold, you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, right? Like or you're just hanging out with your people that you came there with. I like how Grid Life is bringing together multiple people. I don't consider myself a McLaren driver. I know you guys probably do or whoever. I just consider myself a guy that is driving a McLaren. Like, I kind of want to buy a Focus RS and run in street. I kind of want to buy a 86 and run Club TR. Like, it's just the 720 is the thing that makes the most sense because I can use that and do rallies, right? But the big thing is there's almost no other entities that are, you can have this mix of cars all together. So I get why you guys are driving essentially halfway across the country, to spend 2 hours on track a weekend. It makes sense.
Right. It is only 2 hours on track, but like it's an entire event and it's the off track activities that are just as enticing as the actual track stuff. So like, sure, I could go over to Road America and do an HPD day with any number of organizations. Or even do a competition. But when you're not on track, which arguably is 90% of the time, Grid Life is where you want to be because of the people, the companies that come out, just the bullshitting that is just so much fun. Just it's like being back in high school again, but being able to have fun with cards in a safe environment and see other cards that are not just in your class. So, it's a good time.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I hope to bring some of my family from Colombia. They've now are speaking out and are interested in going to one of the events, my mom included. So hopefully this is going to be the year that she is actually on track with me. Well, nice. And like the little taxi drift thing grip I like to put on at festival events.
Yeah, those are fun. I always feel bad though, like for some of the people, like I'm like, all right, you know, I'll bring the BMW out, and then they always seem to end up like you're getting somebody belted in, and then they're like, okay, we're done. So they just waited in line for like 2 hours or whatever to go for a ride. And then they just run out of time, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But sometimes that's what they're looking for. A lot of the spectators, I enjoy like just being able to take it as many people as possible. One of my favorite times was actually the first time they did the taxi drift grip session at Midwest in 2021. Yeah, Fez and I went out there first. Him and I were right behind the Falcon Drift Boys. He is trying to keep up and like hot-lapping his FRS. Meanwhile, the Falcon Boys were leaving us in the dust. So like they are drifting the track as fast, if not faster, than Sunday Cup or Club TR and Street Class cars. So like the bottom three classes are struggling to keep up with these drifters. It's such a riot. And then with the Focus, I was able to take four people out there at the same time.
I used to drive for Roush Performance at SEMA.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I know Justin Pollock. I drove with him. So I would be in a fully built Raptor doing stuff while he was in his FD demo car. And we were both giving rides to people, and we'd come up with, like, silly things to do. So I was talking to him at Midwest Fest, and I'm like, you miss going out there? And he's like, nope, not really. Because like we would just stand around all day long and just wait for our 45 minutes every 3 hours to give people rides. But yeah, some of those guys are just, they're just wild. Just how fast they can carry speed through corners that are, it doesn't even make sense.
It is now becoming one of my life goals to be in a drift car or own a drift car and do a reverse entry. Well, I take that back, 360 entry. Like, I'm in a quarter.
You've never been in a drift car?
One time in Dallas.
Dude, come to Midwest. We'll get you in one.
Yeah. Like, they're always looking for somebody.
But yeah, like, to end on this note, like, grid life is, it's really hard to make friends. I don't know about you guys, but for me, like, it's really hard to make friends outside of college, right? But because of grid life, I've been able to make friends all across the country at this point with all tax brackets, age brackets, whatever you want to call it. It's definitely, I think, a great place to be, and that's one of the reasons why we all kind of go out there and mingle, should talk, as Nick said too. So.
Yep, no, I totally agree. We're all the same person out there. Like, we're all just trying to set the fastest lap we can possibly go, right?
Yeah, like you might be a McLaren owner, a Raptor owner, but you still did a front flip in the snowbank and almost hurt yourself.
I'm still a little kid.
There you go. But yeah, thank you so much, Jason, for coming on. It was a pleasure having you.
Of course. Thank you, guys, and talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Jason. Talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.